Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about the world of finance, both myself and my co-host. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We meet with people like yourself during the week, except for this last week being 4th of July week.
And we come here,
And we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And it's always a privilege and an honor.
Scott, our office, we shouldn't say, but Scott and I personally didn't meet with clients, but advisors in our firm did, and our offices were open like any normal business.
No, our organization, we've got over 100 employees.
Yeah,
a lot of people working. No one was working on Wednesday. I hope not.
Yes. So, but
I don't always know, for that matter.
Most of what we talk a lot about retirement. That is what that's what we talk about. We talk about college funding and life insurance and what you should own and paying off mortgages. But most people's ultimate goal is to get to the ability to retire.
Yes.
Not necessarily to retire, but the fact that the ability to retire.
To get to a point in life where work is an option and not an obligation.
Yeah. And some people call it financially independent. You could use that word if you want or
whatever. It's the same thing.
Yes.
It's being at a point where you've got the financial resources so that you have options in your life.
And for many people, retirement is something that people look forward to. And for many, it is as scary as can be. I read an article a couple weeks ago. The husband and wife retired, you know, the goal was to retire by the time they were 35. And I thought, that is ridiculous. Is that what it's about? Really? Is that really what it's about? Is to just check out at the age of 35?
I like to, I listened to some podcasts of entrepreneurial type people. I was listening to one a couple weeks ago.
Like TEDx or...
Entre Leadership, which is part of Dave Ramsey's organization, because he's got the Entre Leadership has some interesting people. And I was listening to Rich Rolls' podcast.
What's it called?
His name is Rich Rolls.
Rich?
They're a little long for me sometimes.
Rolls.
Sometimes they're too... listened to one of his podcasts, and he was interviewing Jesse Itzy or something like that, who was a... He co-founded a bunch of different... But they're all... This guy was in his 50s and just talking about how his life kind of evolved over the years in some companies. And then this guy found it interesting because he created these weekend adventures where you go to these mountains and you hike up the mountain, take the gondola back, and you do it if you're going to do it, how many steps to do to Everest. So you got to.
Oh, it's kind of like a fake Everest?
Yes, it's exactly. And they get a couple hundred people at these. That's what I was listening to.
Retreats. Like Everest, do they actually then?
But you don't have to have a huge sacrifice and all that. There's no yaks like.
They're not
sliding down the
crevasses
there's no real danger.
They're not walking by dead people on the side.
No,
like you did in Everest. There's a bunch of oxygen tanks out there.
It's frozen dead body been there for a few years.
It's like a Disneyland Everest.
Correct. Anyway, it's this new kind of thing you started, and I was really fascinated because it's that kind of thing. My point is. The reason I like hearing these guys' stories is because, and gals' stories, they tend to be people who, they take some ownership of their life. I mean, most entrepreneurs are wired a little bit differently than the average person, which is fine, but
mostly they couldn't get a job anywhere.
But they're not talking about retiring.
They don't. But it's hard for us to understand, Scott, because I didn't clock in 9 to 5 for 40 years. And so I don't think most people necessarily want to retire. They just want to change the situation they're in. That's what the key is. If you talk to someone that is
absolutely
retired, it's not that they don't want to work or they like the social interaction. They like the productivity. They just want to do it on their terms.
And maybe they want to do something different than what they're doing today.
Correct.
Totally get that.
So when we get a lot of calls on the show, it revolves around retirement, whatever that word means.
And you know, it's interesting at Hanson McLean, we've certainly worked with a number of people who've come in and say, I hate my job. I want to retire. We say, okay. We look at the numbers and stuff. It's like, you know, you got six. You're going to have to work 6 more years.
Yeah, you can't retire next year like you wanted to.
No.
Sorry. That's the numbers.
And
unless you change your lifestyle.
Frankly, I mean, our firm, one of the things that our firm has always prided itself in is that we tell people what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear. So I can't tell you how many people have come in into our office, say they're going to retire.
And we say, it doesn't make sense.
You can't.
Unless you change your lifestyle or you move to a.
Here's what it's going to mean to you.
A lesser, this is what you're going to live on.
Here's the sacrifice if you really want it. So oftentimes we'll talk to someone, maybe they're 6 years out from retirement, and we'll say, well, what would you rather be doing? You hate your job. What would you rather be doing? And we've had people where we said, help them figure out a career transition, sometimes to even a lesser paid career.
And maybe they work another 10 years. Maybe they work 10 years at a lower, but they're happier.
And I'm thinking of someone right now that now they have no intention of retiring. They went to found something that they enjoy doing.
Yeah.
But to your point, Pat, it's about having options.
That's what the idea of retirement is about, which is.
The reason we're big on having people having their homes paid off for retirement at Hanson McLean, we've always preached that. Not 100% of the time it makes sense, but for the majority of Americans, that's what they would like.
If you can get your home paid off in retirement, it gives you much more options. It is money not going out is exactly the same as money coming in.
I ran into a friend of mine at the gym a couple weeks ago. He's 70. He's been retired a few years. Guy I used to run with over the years. And he was talking about he's doing this trip to Europe. And we said something about, well, having your house paid off. He says, Scott, he says, we got our house paid off a couple of years ago. He says it was a couple grand a month. He says, $2,000 a month? That's $24,000 a year. He says, it's not like $100 a month or $200. Yeah. It's $24,000 a year. We can do a lot with $24,000 a year. He's talking about his trip he was planning.
Part of it was because his home was paid off. Money not going out. Remember that. Money not going out is exactly the same as money coming in. Not having an expenditure is exactly as having income. That goes with cable, cell bills, everything across the board.
Yeah. So, what was the point with all this?
I don't know. We're trying to tell people why.
And cell phones. And I had to call the cable company a couple of weeks ago and they made my. Why is it? They design it to be punishment. Do you not feel that way? Oh, you don't. Your wife takes care of those things.
Well, I call them occasionally.
You do? When you're bored?
No.
Lonely?
No. How are you?
Hi. What do you need? Nothing really.
I'm just a long-time subscriber. Just want to see how you guys are doing.
You got to talk to people all over the world. What's it like where you are?
I know. In India? Hot?
Yeah. So what time is it there? 2 in the morning? 2:30. Oh, it's a half hour difference there.
How's the wife and kids? That's funny.
Is the tent a little cramped for you? What's the living conditions like?
Scott, let's go. Let's move on. Man. That is kind of funny.
All right.
No, I do. We call the cable company every 6 months and threaten to quit so the bill goes down.
That's what I did recently.
Yeah.
And I almost got off and I actually questioned if it was worth it. Okay. I think it shortened my life expectancy.
You saved
the stress
money.
Was bad. It ruined my day.
You saved a bunch of money. You don't need to save as much now that you have a shortened life expectancy.
Yes, it was like your advice. Money going out is the same as not coming in.
Alrighty.
We're going to take some calls here. If you want to join us to be part of our program, we'd love to take your call.
We think we're funny.
We do. Anyway, we have a good fun time with each other. 1-888-2-HANSON is our contact number. If you got a question regarding your retirement, maybe you're trying to figure out, are you financially independent at this point or need to make some changes or whatnot? 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. Let's talk with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Wonderful.
Great. Great. Well, my question was, I'm in kind of a good position that I make a pretty good income. I've got about 4 years left to work. And apparently I make too much to have a Roth IRA. And I've heard that there are other still ways of getting around that. Kind of you make three rights to make a left turn, and you can do a Roth. Is that correct?
There we go. So you can own a Roth, but your income disallows you from contributing to a Roth.
What's the point of having a Roth if you can't?
Well, if you already, he said, I can't have a Roth.
Okay.
You can own a Roth.
There were benefits to having that, yeah, but my income is such that I make too much, I can't do it.
So you can no longer contribute to a Roth.
What you can contribute to, you are able to contribute to what's called a non-deductible IRA. I'm assuming you're over age 50, is that correct?
That is correct.
Otherwise, you'd be retiring awfully young, but okay. So you can contribute $6,500 to a non-deductible IRA, and you're thinking, why would I want to do that?
For both you and your spouse.
Although there's spousal limitations, if your income's above 187 or so, you can't contribute to a spousal.
Yeah, unless so we got that problem too.
Is your spouse work outside? Does your spouse work for a living?
Yes, she does.
Okay, then you both could contribute to a non-deductible IRA. Of course, that doesn't solve your problem. You think, what's the point? I don't want to have more money in an IRA if I don't get a tax deduction. But if you do, you have other IRAs or just 401ks?
I do have other IRAs, 401k. I have excess benefit.
So let's step back for a second. How much do you have in other IRAs, which are deductible IRAs, ones you took a deduction on? How much money is in that? Either you rolled over a 401k to get it there, or you made non-deductible IRA. You made deductible IRA.
About $500,000.
Okay.
And have you ever done non-deductible IRAs?
No.
Okay. So this $500,000 is all going to be taxable one day.
Tell us about your 401k that you have now. Are you self-employed or do you work for someone?
No, I work for someone, and I, at age 59 and a half, I was told I could take some out and not be penalized and roll it into other areas.
That's
and
right.
Have other advisors. So I've done that. So I still have about $700,000 in the work.
So we're going to tell you how you can take advantage of, and does your wife have IRAs outside of her retirement plan?
Yes, she does.
Okay. So we're going to tell you how to take advantage
of whether or not it makes sense, we don't know.
And then we don't know. You're going to have to make up that. But we'll tell you how to do it, and then you decide whether you want to go through the hassle or not.
So if you made a non-deductible IRA contribution today, we finished the conversation now. You say, oh, great, I got the advice. You made a non-deductible IRA contribution and then converted it to a Roth. What would happen is all for tax reasons, the IRS says, wait a minute, we can't just look at one IRA. We have to look at all your IRAs. And because you got $500,000 in IRAs, the vast majority of this conversion, we're going to pretend like it's coming from those other accounts, and only a small amount is going to come from that non-deductible. So the vast majority of it's going to be taxable. So that's not going to work. What you can do, not maybe whether or not it makes sense, I don't know. If you transferred all of your IRAs back into your company's 401k and your spouse did the same, now you no longer own IRAs. Yes, you own 401ks. You might have some other type of pension plans, but you no longer have any IRAs. Now, if you have no IRAs and you make a non-deductible contribution into an IRA, and once you can, for tax reasons, your cost basis, so to speak, is whatever your contributions were, $6,500. So when you convert that Roth, like non-deductible IRA into a Roth IRA, your taxable amount is going to be zero. And that's how you can get.
And the reason you couldn't do that.
So at the end of the day, you've got $6,500 into a Roth IRA, just like you would have been able to had you not had your income.
And the reason you have to move your IRA back to the 401k is because if you didn't do that, when you do the conversion from the IRA to Roth IRA,
pro rata,
they do a pro rata on it. So now, in saying all that, if that isn't significantly confusing, I don't know what is.
Now, that's pretty well confusing. That leads me to my next question.
Okay.
So if a guy has done everything that he can, invested wisely, best thing I did was get married this last summer, and so we're kind of in the same boat. We make a lot of money. What is one thing that I could do? House is paid off. We're zero debt. What's one thing that I could really do, maybe besides this non-deductible IRA, that would be a smart and wise decision?
As far as saving more?
Well, yeah, we're saving like crazy, but I mean, I'm worried if the stock market takes a hit and we're doomed, I'm told.
How much saving do you have outside of your four? What do you mean you're doomed?
Well, I say that the day you retire, if the market's down, you lose just so much money. There's no way to get out of that.
Oh, what percentage of all your assets are in stocks?
Probably 60 to 75%. Okay. I would imagine.
So here's how I would look at doing this. The best thing you could probably do is to buy tax efficient, inexpensive index or ETF funds outside.
Yes.
And lower your equity exposure inside.
I'd say a mutual fund, just so you can contribute to add to it.
Yeah, so it's easy on an easy basis. So let's say you buy the total market, tax efficient, low cost outside. You take after tax dollars and you put it in there, and you say, "Well, I don't want any more equity exposure." Lower your equity exposure inside your 401k and your IRAs so that you actually remain at the same place. That is going to get you as a tax efficient as possible. I agree with you. I wouldn't go through the hassle of moving that 401k back to the IRA back to the 401k to make the $6,500 contribution.
It's not worth it.
It's just too much of a hassle for very little benefit.
Right.
And you've only got 4 years to do it, because you said you're only going to work for another 4 years. That's what I would do. So I wouldn't increase my equity exposure overall. I would just use tax efficient index funds outside the 401k or IRA to do it and lower the equity exposure inside.
All right. Well, provided I can read these notes I've scratched down, that's what I'll do.
All right, Jim. You can always listen to a podcast of this program, but subscribe to our podcast. Yeah. And
I'll do that.
I think we send you a copy of this anyway.
Do we send them something?
Do we send our listeners a copy, a link of the program? Yeah, we'll send it to you.
Nice. Yeah, throw those notes out the window.
Thanks, Jim.
Great. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break for note from our sponsor. Stick around.
Are you a sports fan? Each year, teams spend the preseason getting ready for their big opening game. Well, retirement's a little like that. The difference is that instead of a yearly preseason, you spend your career getting your finances in shape for a retirement that could last 25 years or more. Think of Hanson McLean as the coach that gets you ready for your retirement season. For a free retirement readiness consultation, visit us at HansonMcLean.com today.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean. I know I said it's a note from our sponsor. I guess
through our own commercial.
Anyway, you know, it's funny because I've had people say, Scott, how come you guys never like promote
our firm on our show?
We promote all our education material. We're proud of it. We're very proud of our firm as well. But we don't want people to feel like this. They're just being pitched when they...
Yeah, that we're not.
So we don't
sold
pitch
to.
It. Yeah, that's not.
You're calling the show. We're not going to capture your number and call you back.
Nope. All right, let's continue with calls. 1-888-2 Hanson. We're talking with Bobby. Bobby, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Bobby.
So I'm a first time caller.
Oh, thank you.
And I have a question about my rollover IRA.
All right.
And I recently sold some a number of bond mutual funds because I didn't like the impact of the rising interest rates might have.
Okay.
And I have about 46% in equities and 54% cash or equivalents.
Okay.
All right. I'm single, no dependents. I'm retired at 67. I have a decent pension, taking Social Security, and I have some assets outside of my accounts, so I have no need to take any money out of my retirement accounts at this point. So I'm thinking of what to do with that cash equivalent, whether I should ladder CDs, corporate bonds, or U.S. Treasuries, and do you have any advice on... annuities.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's
the first thing I would look at is to see if it makes sense for you to be converting any money of this from your IRA to a Roth IRA based upon your marginal tax rate today. Have you gone through that exercise?
No, I do have a Roth IRA.
I understand. So
and I have a regular IRA.
So how big is this 401k?
Which one is that? The 401k.
The one where you have
your retirement account.
Your retirement account.
Maybe it's in an IRA. IRA, I believe, Pat.
Oh, the IRA.
The IRA?
Yeah.
The IRA is about 750,000.
Okay. And what's your approximate income?
About $100,000 a year.
Okay.
So converting wouldn't make sense.
Wouldn't make any sense.
So you're looking at a fixed income alternative. You don't like the bond funds. Okay. Got that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
I have about $400,000 in my IRA. To play with.
There are some, well, we don't want to play with it, but so, I hear you. There are some funds that are floating rate funds that invest in debt instruments that are basically tied to LIBOR or tied to some other instrument. So they fluctuate in value, which you could use for some portion of this.
Mm-hmm.
But with these dollars, you could probably find better rates in CDs than you could in treasuries.
Or 2-year treasuries.
Maybe 2 years treasuries. You might find the treasury rates have come up quite a bit. You might just be better off laddering some T-bills and
yeah, the problem is that
treasury notes.
In a brokerage account, buying the CDs, she's going to be buying them through a brokerage exchange.
Or you got to go direct to a bank.
Which is cumbersome.
I'd strongly encourage you against doing a laddering of corporate bonds because here's why. We've been doing this a long time, right? So the financial crisis... There were some investment grade companies that were AAA bonds that did not exist after the financial crisis, and people were paid 70 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, you've got credit risk there.
Yeah.
So, but Scott,
and unless you've got $10 million or more, where you can really get great diversification, I would not do corporate bonds.
So, Scott,
individual,
we're not buying 2-year treasuries in our accounts. And why? Because we're comfortable with our bond allocations, the yields we're getting out of them.
Yes. Because right? We're pretty short duration in our bond.
Yeah. Price. And we're using some floating rate.
Yeah.
But my fear with floating rate, when you say floating rate on the radio,
go out and buy floating rate.
Because people can't tell good from bad. Right. And there's a lot of garbage.
Same thing with a lot of bond funds.
Right. Lots of garbage out there.
High yield bond funds out there.
Yeah. Lots and lots and lots of garbage out there. And the average consumer can't tell good from bad. They cannot tell good from bad.
So we're biased. So I believe our bond portfolio would yield a higher return than what...
2-year treasuries.
Yes.
Yes, do I.
but she doesn't... But she wants to do it on her own.
She wants to do it on her own.
Which is fine. So I would use...
yeah.
You asked about annuities. So if you go and buy an annuity, here's what happens. You go to... Let's say you gave $100,000 to an insurance company for an annuity, for... a deferred annuity, which is, I think, what you're looking at, where you get a guaranteed principal, a guaranteed interest. The insurance company goes, and they're in the exact same position you're in, Bobby. It's like, all right, well, where are we going to invest these dollars? What bonds are we going to buy on the marketplace? So they go into the market and build a portfolio just like you would build a portfolio. The difference here is they've got that commission that they just paid some broker off the top. Plus, if interest rates rise, they have the same market value adjustment that you would have had. So oftentimes you'll have to have your money locked up for many years, and you could end up buying an annuity today. Let's say you have a 7-year surrender charge, and 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you're looking at your rates like, this rate's horrible. I'd like to go and buy a new annuity, but you can't. And that same insurance company might even be offering new annuities with a higher rate, but you're stuck in the pool that you bought back in 2018.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So minus... you investing the dollars in our bond portfolio.
And I could, whatever, if you don't, that's fine.
Because we're not buying the 2-year treasuries. We're comfortable with the portfolios that we're building on the bond side. But the average consumer doesn't have 3 chartered financial analysts on staff looking at it every day. The easiest, simplest thing to do
treasury bills.
Is 2-year treasuries.
Or some six-month, 1-year, 2-year. Because you're making the assumption rates are going to continue to rise.
Yeah. And then you just ladder treasuries.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
I wouldn't buy, but I, You could do bank CDs. You could go to Synchrony Bank, but it's a pain in the, you're going to have to move them over there, and then you're going to buy the one-year CDs. And it's just as easy. The treasuries are yielding almost the same, not more. So it wouldn't be the portfolio that we would build internally, but for the average person that wants to do it themselves, quick and easy, very little risk, just ladder some treasuries.
Yeah.
All righty.
Appreciate the call, Bobby. Wish you good luck with that. And, you know, it's interesting. Most people say they can't predict the stock market, but it's surprising how many people believe they can predict the bond market. Well, and professional and people in our industry, everyone thinks they can predict the. They know where rates are going for some reason.
Well, we know where they've gone,
and we know that the Fed has said they're going to increase short term rates, but it doesn't.
They
mean...
They think they're going to increase short term rates.
That's what the plan is.
I mean, it could change on a dime,
and. Frankly, things get priced into the market. So the longer-term bonds are already priced in a rate increase on the Feds.
Yeah. So.
Hope that call was helpful for you in some way, Bobby. Well, the clock says we need to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for sticking around with us. We're going to go back to calls here in a moment at 1-888-2-HANSON. But we want to talk about briefly before we do that, the amount of wealth that is going to be transferred.
Could be transferred.
Well, will be transferred.
Expects to be transferred.
Well, this is a report from Accenture. Accenture recently did this report. It's the big account, the big consulting firm there. They said over the next 30 to 40 years, $30 trillion in assets will pass from boomers to their heirs in the United States alone.
$30 trillion.
Yep. $30 trillion. And another study said that a third of people who have received an inheritance had negative savings within 2 years of the event.
So you inherit some money and you actually, well, did they have negative savings before?
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay.
But here's the funny thing. We see at Hanson McLean and you know, inheritance, it's an interesting thing because at Hanson McLean here, we meet with a lot of people as their latter part of their career, figuring out, am I set? Can I go to retirement? And then we help them through retirement transition and help them throughout their retirement. And we've got clients for
25 years.
And clients that have gone through that whole stage of retirement, through retirement, and then passed away and left an inheritance to some. We've dealt with all those issues at Hanson McLean, and it happens on a frequent basis.
And most of the time, the people that inherit the money, we offer to take them on as clients because we manage their parents' clients. And about, what would you say, get?
How many do a good job with inheritance?
Maybe a third, 20%, 25%. Some kids do.
I think it's a little higher than that. It's interesting, though, because you'll see in the family, let's say there's three siblings, the money gets left to three children. One will blow it right away.
You see it.
One will be super responsible with it.
And others will just kind of do okay. So it's like a third, a third, a third.
Maybe. That's just our experience, what we've experienced. Well,
The numbers actually say, same study from Accenture said 70% of the intergenerational wealth transfers will fail by the time they reach the second generation. 70%.
They're going to blow through the money.
Yeah, that's what it means.
They're going to blow through the money.
So,
well, you know, it's interesting. So sometimes we see in the media of some of the ultra wealthy, the uber wealthy. And I couldn't help. We don't see like much of Paris Hilton anymore. Right. I don't know what happened to her, but for a while. And I was kind of perplexed because I'm thinking, I wonder if Conrad Hilton, how he would feel about. He obviously worked his tail off.
Yeah.
To build this business. And here he sees some granddaughter.
I haven't kind thought of at all anyone. About Paris Hilton. I'm just going to share that with you, but I'm glad you did. I haven't given
I don't know why, a second thought. You know what? Here, because what? Because she has, there's another Hilton that does a bunch of, has helped a lot with World Vision on doing wells around the world.
Oh, is that right?
And I've seen some of his videos on trying to encourage people to give money for wells. And I couldn't help but think.
That was
two,
one.
Same family.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to knock Paris Hilton. Yeah. Well, I guess I kind of am. Maybe she's a great gal. I don't know.
Maybe she does wells too.
Maybe
privately.
She does, but
privately. Maybe she actually makes. Maybe who knows how it works. But let's leave the Hiltons behind because okay. We're going to do nothing but insult
some
this.
Families.
Thank you.
Just blow their money.
Some do.
Spend it on all. Just spend it for themselves. I got to tell you, I was in a couple years ago for my 50th birthday. I went to France on a bike trip, a okay. cycling trip, with my wife and a couple other friends of ours.
Sounds bourgeois, but keep going.
That's why I almost didn't mention it. But
okay, sounds bourgeois.
Through Provence.
Well, you've worked hard. You've worked
my
hard.
My 50th birthday, and we'd planned for a long time.
You've worked hard.
So we're at
I've
some,
worked harder, but you've worked hard.
We're at some fancy restaurant that specializes in truffles. And frankly, I've never been a big truffle fan because it's a little
okay.
bunch of, but, and I forget there's one, it's the black truffle or the white truffle?
I give, go fish.
Okay, all right, same okay. thing. And if, excuse me if you're a huge truffle fan, if you're a chef, thinking, oh my gosh. This
go
one
fish.
One of the truffles sells for like a couple thousand bucks an ounce or something like that. Ridiculously expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget if it's the black or the white, it doesn't matter to me. But the restaurant, they say, oh yeah, the Walton family, the Walmart heirs, they were here and that's all they would eat. Everything that was cooked had to be with the-
Oh, the truffles. And they told you this.
They told me that, yeah. So much for anonymity.
Kind of a breach.
And I remember, because as a financial advisor, sometimes I look at the world a little differently. But I remember thinking, here is Sam Walton.
Well, built this incredible, it was his reputation was being cheap as cheap can be.
Yeah, and wanted to be able to provide poorly made goods in China.
Well, that's not fair.
Okay, then.
I've become a muffler for this radio show that I, my job is to censor your.
He wanted people to have a cultural experience by going into Walmart because it's always a.
Okay, now that, keep going. Holy smoke, Scott.
So, anyway, my point here was I see how they're spending, and I just thought.
Dad would not be happy with this.
And how common is it?
It's fairly common. So, people now let's recognize this. How, if you're leaving money behind to your children and you want it to actually make a positive change in their life, how do you do that?
Well, you might structure it correctly ahead of time. Have some discussions ahead of time.
So, you actually should talk about money with your family.
Yeah, and that's a funny thing because we are very private with our money. Oftentimes, we don't talk with our family about money. But if you're going to be leaving some funds to your kids, you should start having a conversation with them well before you're on your final days.
So when my children are about the age of 15, we actually start involving them in the conversation about money. Our own personal, my wife and our personal finances. Just to, and by the time they're 20, 21, we're fairly open about it. But at the same time, we constantly tell them that this has nothing to do with you. You have to make your own money and you're responsible for money that you are expected to go out and make your own way in the world. When you graduate from college, it's done. I mean, it's flat out done. I don't care if you can wait, you have to wait a table or live 17 to a room. That's when it's over, right?
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely. Now, whether we do that or not is completely different. Completely different.
As my oldest is going to grad school, and she came to me, Dad, can you help pay for grad school? I go, of course I'll help pay. She says, well, you always told me that after college I'm on my own. Well,
right? You've got to lay it out. So you've got to talk about, if you want it to be done right, you've got to talk about money. You want to talk about the importance of the money, which is, look, money doesn't make a person. People make money. The things that you can count in life don't count the most. And the things that you can't count, count the most. You want to enforce that on your children that money does not make a person. So because you inherit any or all kinds of money or no money doesn't mean that you're good or bad. And the things that you can't count in life count the most. So you focus on values. And then you try to get them established a purpose with the money. So if you inherit this IRA or this house, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to spend it? Are you going to go on vacations? Are you? And the better these conversations are with your children while they're alive, if they expect to inherit $50,000, $100,000, a million, $10 million, it doesn't matter. The three things should always be the same. Talk about it with them. Focus on the values, not the balance of the account. And then what is the purpose of this money? Is it to help you retire better? Is it to help your grandchildren or great-grandchildren? The more you do that with your children, the greater the likelihood yep. that money will be actually used in a productive manner.
Yep. So there we go. If you want to join the program, we're going to go to the calls now. 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. That will get you on Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're talking with Stephen. Stephen, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Mine is a two-part tax question.
All right.
Okay. I would like to donate, or I was going to give a contribution to a charity, and I was going to do it by selling some stock and then taking the money from that and then donating that money to the charity. But I was thinking, wait a minute, if I do that, I'll get taxed for capital gain.
Yep.
So I thought, well, then maybe I'm better off just by donating the stock directly to
yes.
the charity. And that is a better idea.
Yes, absolutely. So absolutely. If you have the ability to gift appreciated assets
yes.
to a charity.
This is, by the way, anybody out there that is giving any amount of money more than, let's say, $500 a year.
This is the way to do
yes.
it. So let's ask a little bit about the charity, because some charities have the ability to take stocks
or mutual. Large ones.
Small ones don't, but there's a way around that, which is by using what's called a gift trust.
Donor-advised fund.
Or a donor-advised fund. So tell me about the charity you're giving a stock to.
Okay, the charity is a senior organization. It hosts lunch and community events.
Okay, so it's small. It's pretty small.
It has a clientele of maybe 200 people.
Okay. First, so I would ask them, Stephen, say, look, can you guys accept stock or mutual fund shares of securities as a donation? If they say they cannot, you can set up a donor advised fund at many of the large institutions, Charles Schwab, Fidelity, TD Ameritrade, and they're very simple. And what happens with that, you take your securities and you just instruct them. Let's say you want to transfer $1,000. You say, please transfer, and you just calculate how many shares that's going to be, and it's going to work out close to it because you're not going to know the exact price of the data transfers. So you say, please transfer X number of shares of ABC company to this nonprofit. And they do that, and then whatever the average trading price was that day between the high and the low, that is the value of your gift. And as long as you've held the shares for more than 12 months, you are eligible for a tax deduction for that.
And you do not have to pay capital gains on it. So, so I'll tell you how my wife and I manage this. So throughout the year, we know how much approximately we're going to give to charity. Throughout the year, we don't know exactly dollar for dollar what charities they're going to go to. That changes over time. Now that I found out Scott Hansen's wife is involved with CASA. In El Dorado County, I'll probably kick some money that way. So what we'll do is we'll actually transfer appreciated assets in the form of either exchange-traded funds, stocks, or mutual funds.
Or real estate
to this gift fund. Once it gets in there, it's liquidated. We liquidate it and it goes in cash. And Scott Hansen's wife calls up and said, hey, Pat, can you give $1,000 to CASA? I just go online. I type in the name of the charity and their ID tax ID number. And it populates the field. I say, okay, I'm going to give $1,000 here. It comes right out of this. account and goes to the charity.
Simple.
It is so simple. We give to our church the same way. We give to the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services the exact same way. It all comes out of this account. I get the deduction when the money goes in, not when it's given away.
Okay, what is that process called again, please?
It's called a donor-advised fund or a gift trust. It goes by both names. They're available through, if you've got a financial advisor, we set them up for our clients and our firm all the time.
Yes.
All the time. We recommend them as a great way if you're charitably inclined to give money away.
Now
you can replicate that stock you just gave away or that mutual fund immediately. So even if I wanted to keep that particular holding, I give $10,000 of that holding away. I turn around and buy $10,000 back in my portfolio, and I've reset my cost basis on it, which is a good thing.
There's a limit. There's a limit for tax deduction. It's first of all, you have to itemize your deductions, and it's limited to 30% of your adjusted gross income. So just as a rough example.
And if you're giving away 30% of your adjusted gross income, Stephen, you are an incredible man.
But it also carries forward to other years. So let's say you have a particular stock you own that's way up in value and think, boy, I'd like to give this over the next number of years. Stock's high now. I don't want to incur any tax liability by having capital gains. You can transfer to a donor advised fund or a charity. Actually, donor advised fund at that particular point would make sense. You get the tax deduction that year, and whatever you can't use that year carries forward to future years.
Okay. You kind of answered my second question, which was, is there a cap or a limit on how much you could donate in stock? I guess my question was...
Yeah, so it's 30, and it's actually, if it's a private foundation, I believe the limit's 20%, not 30%, so if it's a private foundation, and if cash is up to 50%, so... those are the limits.
But for stocks, you get the deduction up to
30%. Appreciated asset. And if you haven't held the asset for at least 12 months, you don't get the tax deduction is limited to your cost basis, not the fair market value.
Yeah. Okay, because all my stock is long-term.
Perfect.
Actually, it's only one stock. I was just curious, though, like you said, there is a limit for a given tax year, so that if I have to do a carryover, that actually affects the following year how much I could donate then, because I have to...
But you could carry it forward for 5 years. So if you think this thing is at a high, then do it. I use it as a time to rebalance my portfolio.
Yes. And if you just said if you're highly weighted in one particular stock,
all my stuff is in one stock.
Okay.
That's not really good advice, I know.
No, I know.
Well, but
it might have made you wealthy, though.
But it's done well for you.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, diversification is not a key to get wealthy. It is designed to protect portfolios. So
it is a risk management tool.
Risk management, not wealth enhancement. Okay. Now, if you have some wealth in one particular stock, clearly it would make some sense to diversify. This is a great strategy to maybe even front load several years worth of charitable contributions, if that's what you're inclined to do. Might also be an opportunity to look at some other ways to take advantage of a charitable gift trust or something along those lines. I'd actually,
if it's significant dollar amount, it may make sense to sit down with a qualified advisor or an attorney that would specialize in estates and gifts.
Charitable remainder trust or something along those lines, as a way to diversify that stock without incurring the capital gain taxes.
Yeah, a charitable remainder trust may make sense for you.
Yeah.
So, okay. Charitable.
But you're on the right track.
Absolutely.
What a great way to give money. What a great thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm getting up in years, so I thought I'd start doing stuff.
Well, I mean, it was just Warren Buffett just announced that he announced years ago he's going to give away a bunch of money, and just a few weeks ago said he's giving away all his cash. Look, you can't take this stuff with you, right?
You're right.
You can't take it with you. So you're going to give it away at some point in time, either while you're living or at your death. And I think it's wonderful that you're doing this while you can still see what's happening with it.
Yeah, just don't tell your kids.
Yeah, don't tell the kids.
Don't tell your kids.
No children here.
Oh, got it.
Well, this is the time in our program now where we turn to real advice. And with real advice, we talk to a real financial advisor at Hanson McLean. And we're going to talk about a situation that they encountered, and keep in mind that this is unique to this particular client's situation, and you may have a different experience entirely. And this week we've got Pat Henry joining us. Pat Henry is a certified financial planner professional. He's got over 29 years of experience in financial services. He's been with Hanson McLean since 2004. It says here, I'm just reading this thing, incredibly handsome and a wonderful person. People describing Pat use terms like Mother Teresa and the Pope of financial planning. I don't know who wrote this.
Apparently, we let our advisors write their own bios.
It's funny how that got in there. I don't know where that came from.
I've just seen
this. Just things that I hear in the hallway.
The Pope of financial planning.
The hallway. And you hear it in an echo.
That was pretty funny.
You hear it in an echo chamber,
and you
Pat.
Can tell how much prep we do because I did not see that. No, I'm reading it. So anyway.
But we had Pat on, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago, and the rave. Reviews, Patrick. Rave reviews. So we thought,
tell us about a client's situation you were with and what was going on.
Yeah, so this is a client that I've had there. It's been a client with the firm for about 8 years. He retired. It was actually kind of bought out of his retirement from a large utility company here in town, and his wife retired from the state. So they have good pensions. They've been great savers. They've really done a fantastic job as far as their retirement financial situation goes. And we've been talking over the years about...
Pat, can I for a second?
Yeah.
When we see this fairly often, in fact, we have on our website an emergency guide to retirement, which is a terrible title, but it makes a lot of sense, which is an emergency guide to retirement is if someone gets an offer, an unexpected offer prior to the time that they... we're planning on retirement. So someone's 3 or 5 or 2 years away from retirement and the company comes in and says, here, I want you to consider taking this lump sum of money or an improvement in your pension and you need to be off payroll in 30 or 60 or 90 days. That's why we actually wrote this emergency guide to retirement. Tell us a little bit about that. Was the person far, far away from retirement when they got the offer? Was it a good thing? Because I've seen people that... I talked to a lady the other day, was planning on telling her employer she was leaving in 30 days, and they offered her an offer the very next day that gave her 2 years' salary to leave. She said it was like it just fell on her. So what was this situation like?
He was about 2 years from retirement, so he was relatively close, and he'd been in to see us, he and his wife had been in to see us a couple times prior to this offer coming through. And so when it came down the pike, it was one of those types of offers that he really didn't have a choice whether or not to take it. He was it was forced upon him. And but they financially were in a good position for him to do it. And so he did take the offer, which enhanced his pension. And initially, for the first couple years, he did a lot of volunteer work. He still does some, but he did a lot. He was working almost full time doing some volunteer work for some things that were, really close to his heart. So,
but they had been in. They had
good timing.
But Pat, they had done some financial planning. It wasn't when the offer was made. It wasn't like, oh, what am I going to do? Because he knew where he was financially because he had been in the office a couple times prior to that. Was for some financial planning.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you,
so what
Pat.
Was the problem that needed solving recently
in
this situation?
It wasn't so much a huge issue, but they have an IRA with us that's a little over $700,000. And for the last 8 years, they haven't touched it. They don't think they'll need it with their pensions and other sources of income. And so we started talking about it, and kind of what you guys were just talking about, inheritance with talking to your kids about it and what's the value and what's the purpose of it, we really started narrowing in on what's the purpose of these dollars. And they really said, that this money is going to be inherited by our children. So we started going into that a little deeper, and their kids have done very well for themselves. One's a doctor, and the other one has married into a situation that both their incomes are much higher than the parents' incomes who are our clients. And so when we looked at that, we looked at it and said, okay, they're not going to need income until they have to start taking their required minimum distributions in about 4 years.
Your clients don't, correct?
Our clients, correct. And so let's look at where you are from a tax bracket standpoint, and they're kind of solidly in the middle of the new 22% federal tax bracket. So they have a window of about $40,000 a year that if they were to take a distribution from their IRA or do a Roth conversion on their IRA, it's not going to throw them into a higher tax bracket. So we started working through that strategy of
because the kids aren't. So the idea here is if they do nothing,
and the kids inherit more money because they took as little as possible out, that you'd be paying the government more money on the overall dollars than you wanted to. So by you going to the clients and saying, let's think about where the money's going to end up since you're not going to spend it in your lifetime, we're going to start converting to a Roth IRA. How did they accept that? How did the clients view that?
We've had initially they kind of took it in, but did no action. We've had the conversation now for a little over a year on it, and with tax reform coming through and the brackets coming down, I think it softened the blow on it, because their thought was, let's defer it as long as possible. But when they finally started seeing it, this money's going to go to our kids and they're going to pay more in taxes on it, they're coming around to, hey, let's start doing this because someone's going to pay the taxes. Let's lock it in at our tax bracket versus our kids, and we'll start moving some of the highly appreciable assets in there. They have some individual stocks that are fairly growth-oriented. We'll start moving those over first so that when they do actually have to take RMDs, it's actually going to probably lower, or should lower, their RMD amounts that they're going to have to take, and we'll continue converting the Roth until we basically get all this money over in a tax-free vehicle that their kids will inherit, even though they'll have to take income from it when the parents pass away. It'll come out to them tax-free.
That's great planning.
Good planning.
Good planning. Thanks, Pat. Thanks for being a part of Hanson McLean and joining our show.
Yeah.
You're very welcome, gentlemen. Yeah.
And it's something that people need to be looking at in their 60s. They really do. Anyway, we're out of time, unfortunately. But love to see you here again next week. Same place, same station. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.